and he just lost 10 members of his family, including his sister. I mean, he had this very beautiful relationship with his sister, and she has a beautiful daughter. She's 2 years old. Her name is Ward, and he just lost her, and it's been a long time since he last see them.
But you can see a lot of resilience. You can still see a lot of patience. God has given him so much patience. I have no idea how he's been able to go through all of that.
In addition to his uncle and brother, who were leaders in the Palestinian resistance, at least 5 children were killed during this massacre, which is one of the many taking place in Gaza amid international silence. Abed's family is one of many in Gaza that are willing to give their lives for the sake of their homeland. While the Israeli atrocities have led to global condemnation on the barbaric nature of the regime's practices, yet Palestinian people believe that their sacrifices is a necessary step on the path to liberation. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
The Turkish president has called for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza while announcing the cancellation of a planned visit to Israel. Erdogan said his problem was not with the Israeli people, but with Netanyahu's cabinet and its inhumane war against Palestinians in Gaza. The Turkish president also considered Hamas a group of fighters defending their land, rejecting the term terrorist that Israel and the Western officials often use in reference to the Palestinian resistance movement.
We had a project to go to Israel, but it was cancelled. We will not go. Israel has taken advantage of Turkey's good intentions. I urge for an immediate ceasefire. Hamas is not a terrorist group, but a group of liberators and mujahideen fighting to protect their homeland and their citizens.
The Turkish president said the international community should learn a lesson from previous failed peace negotiations between the two sides. Erdogan assured that Turkey can be a mediator on a new round of talks, while also insisting on the importance of Palestinian unity to make it work. He added that he was saddened by the United Nations Assembly's inability to reach a resolution for a ceasefire. Meanwhile, the Turkish people continue to hold a protest across the country, condemning the Israeli aggressions in Gaza. People in major cities have been calling on their government to intervene in order to end the siege on the Gaza Strip and stop the killing of innocent civilians. More than 6,000 Palestinians have been killed and around 18,000 others injured since the start of the Israeli war in the Gaza Strip. Over 50% of the buildings in the blockaded strip are also destroyed. This, the result of only 3 weeks of Israel's relentless bombardment of the besieged territory. Meanwhile, the world leaders are either apt to support the regime's atrocities or remain silent. Rahşan Saglam, Istanbul.
Ambassadors of Arab and Islamic countries to Russia expressed their support for Palestinians, condemning the brutal Israeli aggression on the Gaza Strip. They slammed the ethnic cleansing carried out by Israel against Palestinians with the support of the United States. Iran's ambassador to Moscow, Kazem Jalali, emphasized that the genocide of the Palestinian people is a tragedy for all humanity. He also described Israel's crimes against the Palestinians as disgusting and shameful.
For the past 75 years, the Israeli regime has been killing, imprisoning Palestinians and exterminating people. Imam Khomeini said that the Israeli regime was not the regime that wanted to move towards peace from the very beginning. As long as Israel exists, the region will not see peace. The U.S. condones its crimes. 45 resolutions were vetoed by the United States in the UN and Security Council, preventing the voice of the Palestinian people from being heard.
The tragedy of both Arabs and Muslims began with the Balfour Declaration in 1917. Since then, they have been confronting not only Israel, but also everyone who sponsors, supports, and justifies the crimes of this regime.
There is not enough reason for Israel and for the international community and for European and for American to stand against with Israel against Palestinian. In Gaza, we are living more than 2.5 million Palestinian civilian. You know, and I mean, from the day one, they closed water, electricity, fuel. Anything.
Lebanon's position is very clear. We don't want war. We don't want any provocation, but at the same time, we are ready to defend our land. We are ready to defend our dignity. We are ready to defend our people. And Israel has to stop its aggression on Lebanon, on Palestine, and on Syria. A small group of Hamas who have proved that small group of people who have the belief in their cause and who are insisted to go back to their own land and to regain their own right, they can do, a heroic things as they did.
We protest against the genocide committed by the Israeli occupiers in Palestine in general and in the Gaza Strip in particular. As Palestinians abroad, we still believe this is the end of Israel. What happened on October 7th is direct evidence of Israel's shame and disgrace. It is obvious that they cannot resist the Palestinian people. Israel's furious revenge in the form of bombs and missiles on our land and peaceful people is the revenge of despair. We cannot stop at written and verbal condemnations of the Israeli genocide. How many more Palestinian children must die for the whole world to come to their defense? Does this mean that what is happening in Ukraine is a war according to international rules and the direct extermination of Palestinians is the defense of Israel?
The participants in the event stressed that despite all the lies about the Palestinian people that the Israeli regime and the United States have spread, the issue of Palestine remains a central and righteous cause. To this day, the United Nations confirms in all its documents that the Palestinian territories are occupied and has adopted several resolutions in favor of Palestinians.
Ordinary people around the world are heartbroken over relentless Israeli bombings of the Gaza Strip that have left thousands of Palestinians dead and thousands more wounded so far. Moscovites continue to shower flowers to mourn the Palestinian victims. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
Palestinians mourned the death of Omar Daraghmi, a senior Hamas member who had recently been arrested in the occupied West Bank, while Israeli prison authorities insist that his Monday death was a normal death. Palestinians in the occupied West Bank insist that Israel's intensified crackdown on prisoners led to the murder of Daraghmi. Here, outside the building of the International Committee of the Red Cross in Ramallah, Palestinians gathered to mourn the death of Daraghmi. The Commission of Prisoners Affairs told Press TV that according to Daraghmi's lawyer, hours before his death, Daraghmi had appeared before a court hearing and seemed to be in good health.
Martyr Omar Daraghmi was murdered due to attacks he suffered, because only hours earlier he was in good condition. The lawyer of Omar Daraghmi said he spoke to him via video conference and was told he was doing fine. A few hours later, he was declared dead. We know the prisoners reject to be taken to court hearings under the current situation because they are being beaten and assaulted following the hearing. We believe this happened with Omar. He faced a brutal assault leading to his martyrdom.
Hamas movement has also accused Israel of killing Daraghmi, one of its senior leaders in the occupied West Bank. In a press release, the movement held Israel responsible for his death, describing it as an assassination. An Israeli statement claimed his death was due to a heart attack. He was arrested on October 9 and placed under administrative detention. Since October 7, overnight arrest rates into Palestinian cities have escalated. Prisoner advocacy groups say Israeli forces have arrested over 1,300 Palestinians since October 7. They say these prisoners suffer from severe mistreatment and are in dire conditions.
It's part of the war being carried out against our people in the West Bank. It's part of the reprisals. Israeli forces arrest hundreds of people and keep them under administrative detention to keep terrifying the Palestinians. Israel is making Palestinian prisoners pay the price of its failure in Gaza, and it only acts with a tendency of revenge.
Over the past 2 weeks, rights groups revealed that Israel has also arrested some 4,000 laborers from Gaza who were working in Israel and is now holding them in military bases. Amr Daraghmi is not the first Palestinian murdered in Israeli jails. Many Palestinian detainees have been killed in regimes of prisons, either due to medical negligence or torture. This has time and again angered Palestinians who accused the regime of deliberately killing prisoners. Mona Qandi, Occupy Ramallah.
The bloodiest single attack on Gaza since Israel launched a bombing campaign against the besieged Palestinian territory on October 7th. Over 500 Palestinians scorched to death in a blink of an eye in the dark of the night during the Israeli air raid on Al-Ahli Arab Hospital. Many more were severely injured. The victims were mainly patients or civilians who had sought refuge at the hospital, hoping the regime would not target such a medical facility. But they were wrong. The incident drew strong condemnations and triggered mass protests across the globe. Various nations and organizations censured the attack in strongest terms, and many called it a war crime and a blatant violation of international humanitarian law. Among those sympathizing with Palestinians were the international students of Tehran University of Medical Sciences. They organized a gathering in solidarity with the oppressed people of Palestine.
I'm here in solidarity with Palestinians and to show the world our message and to show that it's not fair and it's about humanity and it's not about religion or being Arab or being whatever. It's about humanity only, and we stand with people of Palestine. We're here to send our message, and inshallah, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free.
It's important for, I think, all ages, especially our age, because this is humanity. This is not just a matter of you need to be Arab, you need to be Muslim, you need to be Palestinian. You need to be a human, a decent human, to show support for Palestine.
Participants in this event slammed the attack on Al-Ahli Hospital. A statement by the organizers called on the international community to take swift action to put an end to Israeli brutalities against Palestinians. It also called for urgent humanitarian medical aid for Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip. It warned the healthcare system in the territory is strained, and this could lead to a humanitarian catastrophe there.
Several similar events have been held in Iran and across the globe, condemning the recent Israeli onslaught of the civilian population and infrastructure in the Gaza Strip. Protesters say Israel's aggression in Palestinian territories, including the targeting of hospitals and massacring of children, amount to war crimes and are punishable by international law. Mahdi Abbasian, Tehran.
A few kilometers from the occupied territories in southern Lebanon, war looms once more. Hezbollah's resistance has openly begun a new wave of operations, which is growing into a war of attrition, hitting specific Israeli military targets all along the approximately 130-kilometer border.
Behind me stands one of the Israeli posts which have been targeted by resistance groups more than once since the beginning of the war on Gaza. Hezbollah seems to have kept within the rules of engagement while also warning the Israeli regime and the United States that any wrong move could potentially raise the stakes, prompting the resistance group to move to the next level.
People who have remained in the border town say they are bracing for a new confrontation.
We are steadfast. We never thought of taking refuge or leaving, and we are ready for war. We fear nothing.
We call on Sayyidah Nasrullah. If you decide to go to war, we are ready. Just give us a signal. If we lose one martyr, there will be 1,000 more to replace him. Thousands are ready to sacrifice their lives for this country. We are not afraid. We will see victory, and God willing, soon we will be in Gaza.
Israel's shelling of bordering towns is also intensified. Early morning strikes are the usual. Mohammed Barakat looks around his destroyed house. When we asked him if he was looking for something, he said humorously that he's looking for the keys to the house. He tells us had his family been gathering then, there would have been a massacre.
We are with the resistance at times of war and peace, and we will always be with the resistance. This is a very small sacrifice. Sayyid Nasrallah is very wise, and we trust him. He knows what he is doing.
Our people have gotten used to the barbaric atrocities of the Israelis, and we believe that all this destruction and killing has not stopped the people from continuous resistance and being steadfast in their land. The enemy which targets hospitals does not respect any rules. It is only struggle and strength that can stop them.
The separation wall which Israel has built around the occupied territories has not stopped Hezbollah or other resistance groups like Hamas and Islamic Jihad in Lebanon from launching operations. The current state of tit-for-tat strikes in a limited battle zone could become the new status quo for weeks, if not months. Maryam Saleh, South Lebanon.
Both the government of Pakistan and its political leadership are united in their call for the international community to intensify efforts to bring an end to Israel's atrocities in Palestine. Pakistan's Prime Minister Anwarul Haq Kakar told a press conference in Islamabad that his government is working in collaboration with all stakeholders, including regional and international players, for an end to the ongoing violence in Gaza.
Cessation of violence at the moment is
our major goal right now is to stop violence in Palestine. Secondly, we are trying our best to halt the war between Palestine and Israel, and are in contact with all major stakeholders, including OIC and Saudi Arabia, who can play their role for an end to the conflict. We are working jointly with them to find an immediate solution to the problem of Palestine.
Meanwhile, Pakistan's mainstream political parties have vehemently condemned Israel's actions and called for the international community to boycott the country in light of the atrocities committed in Palestine. The political leaders further urged Western nations to cease their support and favoritism towards Israel in light of the escalating situation in Gaza.
International community, especially the Western world, has chosen to side with the occupier. And they are pretty sure that they will not only redefine the borders of Palestine, but also redefine what international law is. And they will normalize the use of phosphorus bombs and the use of excessive force and the killing of innocent children, innocent non-combatant civilians. And for the first time in the history of this conflict, I feel that it has picked up so much of traction all around the world.
In Pakistan, rallies against Israel continue to unfold as angry Pakistanis criticize the involvement and stance of the United States in the current crisis in Palestine.
The steadfast position maintained by the Pakistani government and political leadership to boycott Israel internationally highlights the growing concern and sympathy among other nations regarding the plight of Palestinians in Gaza. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
In the limelight.
According to recent opinion polls, U.S. President Joe Biden's re-election bid is facing growing concerns among American voters over his age, the economy, and crime. A mere 16% of respondents think Joe Biden is physically healthy enough for another 4 years in office as president. We have taken a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Daily Mail has covered this story and tells us more. A whopping 72% of Americans said President Joe Biden is not healthy enough to be president ahead of the 2024 election, with just 59% saying the same for Donald Trump in a new opinion poll. It comes just days after the New York Times and the Washington Post both published opinion pieces branding the 80-year-old President Joe Biden, the oldest in American history, as too old to run for re-election in 2024. In fact, only 12% of the American people surveyed said they felt confident that both the likely 2024 favorites were healthy enough to run. Perhaps most shockingly, only 7% of those polled said they felt both Biden and Trump had the mental and cognitive health to serve as president, with 23% saying neither of them does. The opinion polls aren't necessarily great for either candidate, as 64% say a Biden-Trump rematch means the political system in America is broken, with just 8% saying both are the best candidates. However, the news remains far more dismal for the 80-year-old Joe Biden, despite being just 3 years older than Donald Trump. According to CBS News, only 33% of respondents feel confident that Joe Biden will make it to the end of a hypothetical second term in office, whereas 55% say Donald Trump will live to 2029. When focusing on mental and physical fitness, voters are much more confident that Trump is fit to serve as president for another term in office, even if they don't agree with his politics. A mere 16% of respondents think that Joe Biden is physically healthy enough for another 4 years in office as chief executive. But 43% say Donald Trump is healthy enough. The national broadcaster CBS News has also covered the same story and tells us more. Recently, a separate CBS YouGov opinion poll revealed 77% of the American public think Joe Biden is too old to be elected for a second term in office. Donald Trump recently told former Fox News host Megyn Kelly that Joe Biden isn't too old, but is grossly incompetent. He later told CBS News host Nora O'Donnell in another interview that he would back cognitive testing requirements to run for president. The CBS YouGov opinion poll shows that Donald Trump would beat Joe Biden in a presidential election by just 1 percentage point in a 50% to 49% outcome. However, it also reveals that 2/3 of registered voters think a Donald Trump rematch with Joe Biden in 2024 would prove that U.S. political system is broken. Along with concerns over Joe Biden's age, the president is also now facing an impeachment inquiry from the Republican-controlled House of Representatives. Donald Trump, on the other hand, was indicted 4 times this year and will need to testify regarding his efforts to overturn Joe Biden's victory in the 2020 presidential election. There are more than a dozen Republicans vying to take Donald Trump's spot as the GOP nominee in 2024. This includes the 38-year-old businessman Vivek Ramaswamy. Joe Biden is running virtually unopposed in the primary. Both Democrats, Robert Kennedy Jr. and Marianne Williamson, launched extreme long-shot bids to oust the incumbent president for the nomination. Ross Douthat, a conservative opinion editorial writer for the Liberal Times, penned a piece titled 2024's Field of Nightmares, a reference to the 1989 film Field of Dreams. He said, While his concerns with Joe Biden come down to run-of-the-mill political disagreements during his first term in office, Democrats are playing with fire in allowing the oldest president in American history to run again. According to Ross Douthat, the two risks of Biden running again, the high stakes of the next election in which a health crisis or just more slippage might be the thing that puts Donald Trump back in the White House, and the different but also substantial stakes of another four-year term. Ross Douthat compared it to liberals praying Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg could live long enough to see a Democrat replace her, only to see her die weeks before the election, with Donald Trump able to nominate another justice to the Supreme Court. David Ignatius wrote a similar column in the Jeff Bezos-owned Washington Post with a more direct headline, "President Biden should not run again in 2024. David Ignatius largely praises Biden's first years in office, claiming the Democrat has governed from the center out and done a good job with foreign policy in supporting Ukraine. However, he says not just Biden, but Vice President Kamala Harris should avoid running in 2024. David Ignatius added, "It's painful to say that given my administration for much of what they have accomplished. But if he and Kamala Harris campaign together in 2024, I think Joe Biden risks undoing his greatest achievement, which was stopping Donald Trump." He cited disastrous poll numbers for Joe Biden in terms of approval rating and the public's opinion of his age. For Kamala Harris, he cited, "Simple fact is that she has failed to gain traction in the country or even within her own party." He even suggested Biden replace Kamala Harris on the ticket with Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass or Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This one lay.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome to Spotlight. Israel continues its bombardment of the besieged Gaza Strip for the 21st day as more Palestinians fall victim to the deadly onslaught. The total death toll has crossed 7,300. At least 70% of those killed are women and children. Authorities in Gaza say over 12,000 tons of explosives have been dropped on Gaza. The regime's strikes are coupled with a total siege on Gaza, cutting off water, electricity, food, fuel, and medicine into the territory. The lack of fuel has left hospitals unable to treat the injured. The WHO has warned the Gaza health crisis is reaching catastrophic proportions, but intense negotiations and endless diplomacy to open a humanitarian supply line has only resulted in a handful of aid convoys. This is while the Israeli military says it's expanding ground operations in a sustained manner. The residents in the besieged Gaza Strip are angry over the world's silence and inaction, which leaves us all with this question. Why does the world continue to fail Gaza during its darkest hours? Joining us on tonight's Spotlight, we have Ray McGovern, former CIA analyst, joining us from Raleigh, North Carolina. And Ken Stone, joining us from the Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War from Hamilton, Ontario.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. McGovern. Sir, how many more innocent Palestinians have to be murdered in order for the international community to say enough is enough?
The big question here is whether there'll be a wider regional war. There are people in Washington trying to provoke that. There'll be no limit to the atrocities in Gaza. There'll be no stop to them. There'll be no ceasefire even for resupply, if that obtains. So the premium right now is not to be provoked, not to regard so-called retaliation by the U.S. against Iranian-sponsored terrorists. Play it cool and wait for the Chinese and the Russians to work their will in the Security Council, failing that in the General Assembly. This is where it all started, of course, when Israel invaded its neighboring countries in 1967. The UN unanimously condemned it in UN Security Council number 242. It called for the withdrawal of the occupying forces, and it said that unanimously. Later, a former Israeli prime minister, Menachem Begin, admitted that we were not being threatened by Egyptian or Syrian forces back in 1967. We decided to make the war ourselves. It was our initiative. We have to finally be honest about this. Well, hello? They're honest about it? It was a war of aggression. There's a UN Security Council that has not been enforced. It's time to enforce it, and I see some hope that the UN can play a constructive role.
Okay, let's cross over to Ken Stone. You can also talk to us about the issue of the failure of the United Nations Security Council to implement any form of ceasefire, humanitarian ceasefire, but also I want you to address the matter that was brought up by Mr. McGovern, and that's the Gaza war spilling over into something wider, a regional conflict, so to say. The Russian foreign minister had, over the past few days, warned of this turning into a regional conflict as being quite serious.
Well, I have to agree with the Russian permanent representative in that matter. Mushroom into a war or even confrontation between the great powers, which would be an awful scenario. I think the reason that the U.S. has sent two aircraft carrier groups in the past couple of weeks and has announced that it's sending two more, which is a huge amount of force, is to deter any possible participation or any possible intervention in this war by Hezbollah or by the Islamic Republic of Iran to try and help, to try and save the people of Gaza from a genocide or from an ethnic cleansing. So it's a massive show of force to try and prevent regional players from intervening in this one-sided conflict where Israel is basically shooting fish in a barrel. I do hope that when you talked about the UN, you said that it hadn't had any success so far. We have to point out that The Russian Federation had a resolution which called for a ceasefire. The U.S. vetoed that, and then the U.S. tried to bring in another resolution the other day, which did not contain the word ceasefire, and or lifting the siege of Gaza, I believe. And Russia and China vetoed it. Well, hopefully they'll get together at some point and see the wisdom of having a ceasefire and the lifting of the siege of Gaza. In fact, ending the blockade, Israel's illegal blockade of Gaza that's gone on for 16 years. We hope so. But to your point about why does the world continue to fail Gaza during its darkest hours, I would change the focus a bit and say that if you look around the world right now, the people of the world are not failing Gaza. They are standing up right. for Gaza. Do you want me to continue about
yeah,
that?
Sure.
Because there's lots that could be said. Well, in Canada here, there are demonstrations virtually every single day of the week on behalf of Gaza. We had them here in Hamilton, Ontario, and we've had the biggest demonstration of solidarity with the Palestinian people in the history of this city. And they're continuing large demonstrations, 20,000 in Montreal, 15,000, 16,000 in Toronto, every day. There are resolutions being passed. There are meetings happening. There's stuff on social media, webinars, every single day. I have not seen this level of activity since the run-up to the U.S. and British attack on Iraq back in 2003. And it reminds me also going back to the war in Vietnam, where you could call for a rally or a demonstration at 9 o'clock in the morning, and at noon you could have a demonstration, a sizable one. So the people of the world are not abandoning Gaza. They're angry and frustrated, and they're out in the streets. So it's clear to me that the world, that the people of the world are out there, and they're pressuring their politicians, especially here in the West, which have been dragging their feet, though the politicians have had to make changes in their dialogue and their statements, indicating their horror at the Israeli attack on Gaza. So they're,
sure.
they're, people are forcing their politicians to change their stance.
Right. To pick up on that note, Mr. Stone, the demonstrations are there, but still we know, unfortunately, demonstrations are not enough to stop the killing and a massacre of Palestinians in Gaza. But, of course, you mentioned that pressure has to translate over into the governments of these countries. Back to Mr. McGovern in Raleigh, the UNRWA chief, Philip Lazzarini, he said it as direct as possible, that Gaza is being strangled and that basic services in Gaza are crumbling. But however, following, in his words, intense negotiations and endless diplomacy to open a humanitarian supply line, only a handful of aid convoys have been allowed into the Gaza Strip. It's really tough to wrap one's head around that issue, around that fact, that why would only a handful of aid convoys be allowed into Gaza during this time where women and children are suffering? Patients are suffering. Who is the main impediment here?
The operative word, I'm afraid, is genocide. This is what the Israelis intend for Gaza, and this is what the universal world has to stand up against. Now, it is very encouraging that there is more popular support for Palestine than before, despite the despicable Hamas raid, okay? It is encouraging that many of the nations around Israel are speaking reinforced rhetoric, and we probably will see that rhetoric will translate into action pretty soon. But the major factor here are the people like Tony Blinken, who has blinkers on. Now, for somebody to come into Israel and say, you know, I want to help out here, but remember, now I'm a Jew. Well, what does that have to do with this? Well, I'm afraid it does have to do with this. And so Blinken has got to take his blinkers off, and who's going to help him do that? His counterpart, the Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi, who is in Washington today and tomorrow, meeting perhaps with President Biden to see if Biden is still smart enough to realize that two-front war is really, really dangerous. Three-front war, well, that may be able to be financed by borrowing money from the Chinese, but the U.S. cannot win. And why do I say three-front war? Because early this morning, a Chinese fighter came within 10 feet of a B-52, U.S. B-52, flying in the South China Sea. That's close to a catastrophe, folks. The Chinese don't usually do that kind of. What are they trying to say? They're going to say, look, you know, if this incident happens, what are you going to do about it? Are you going to have a three-front war? Ukraine's not finished. You're going to be involved in the Middle East and out in the South China Sea. So Wang Yi is going to measure Biden to see if he's compos mentis and whether Blinken and Sullivan can be embarrassed in his presence to recognize that, look, they better rein these things in. They better do what Blinken said on Tuesday, not what he said last Sunday, namely entertain the notion of a humanitarian ceasefire that could last quite some time, rather than have the Israeli forces invade en masse and chaos ensue.
Ken Stone, what about the mainstream media's twist that they put on this? You talked about the international rallies, international response, and the increased global level of awareness with regards to the Palestinian cause. That's all happening in spite of the media propaganda, the distorted narrative that Western mainstream media puts on events regarding Palestine and the war on Gaza right now, where they're trying to portray Israelis as the victims.
Well, the Western mainstream media always tries to portray the Israeli as the victims, and it always protects the reputation of the state of Israel and basically gives it a pass. But I have to say that I've seen even a change in the tone of the mainstream media here in Canada because of all the demonstrations and the people calling up their MPs, people writing letters to the editor, people becoming involved in the political process all of a sudden. For example, on the two biggest TV stations in Canada, CTV and CBC, a few weeks ago, you would never have seen Palestinians interviewed on the air on national news. Mm-hmm. And in the last few weeks, we've seen representatives of Palestinian organizations on TV, and they've been given long periods of time to explain why it is that there was this explosion in Gaza and what the Israeli declaration of war on Gaza and its military siege on Gaza is going to mean. So I think that there has been a complete shift in the narrative of the mainstream media as well, besides the shift in the discourse of mainstream politicians. So I'm encouraged to see this. Of course, it's not enough. They're always trying to show that Israel and Gaza, Israel and Palestinians are equivalent. But of course, we know that's not true. Israel is the occupier. It's a colonial project. It has a system of apartheid, and the Palestinians are the victims. And the mainstream media still, on the whole, tries to show that the Palestinians are the cause of these problems, which is, of course, asked backwards to the actual situation.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Ray McGovern, the head of Hamas's political bureau, Ismail Haniyeh, he recently made a call to quote-unquote allied brotherly nations to apply pressure through every avenue to stop the ongoing attacks on Gaza. You have to think that his comments were directed at the Arab governments of the region. How would you rate the Arab government's response here so far? Of course, they have the capability. They have the way, basically, to want to get together collectively, have a response in the to the Israelis, specifically the countries that have normalized ties with the Israelis recently, to expel their ambassadors. So the way is there. The question is the will there? How would you rate the Arab governments in their response so far?
Well, the correlation of forces this time is different. The Arab countries and Iran, I might add, are stronger and more united than ever before and more outraged at genocide, as well they should be. The question is whether they will let themselves be provoked prematurely. We have two aircraft carrier strike groups now in the air, or one is coming to the area. The Gerald Ford is there. The Eisenhower is still in the Atlantic, as far as I know. So there is time for diplomatic activity. I think the UN can play a very constructive role, as they should, after all. Since 1967, they haven't enforced that Security Council resolution adopted unanimously by all the countries on the Security Council then. So I just hope that the activities of participants now will not be so provocative that the main players there will see the sense in being somewhat restrained, given the fact that it would suit some of the people in Washington just great if there were an incident, if someone attacked one of those aircraft carriers, and they're not very hard to attack. Think about three soccer fields. That's how long they are. So there are people at risk in there that been put at risk deliberately by U.S. forces. The question is, will they provoke the kind of reaction that some people in Washington very much hope they will?
Ken Stone, would you like to add anything to that? Of course, the reactions coming from Arab countries necessarily doesn't have to be in a military form. They can start collectively, for example, sanctioning Israelis, recalling their ambassadors, maybe scrapping the normalization deals with them, something along those lines.
Well, I do agree that the Arab countries could scrap those normalization agreements and could retract their ambassadors and make strong statements. That's all in the normal line of diplomacy, and they could do it today.
Why haven't they?
I don't know. I'm not privy to their innermost thoughts, but it may happen. I'm thinking that there are a couple of things that your other guest, Mr. McGovern, who I greatly respect, didn't mention, and that is that the U.S. and Israel are putting a lot of pressure on the neighboring countries right now to keep them in line. For example, Israel has bombed the Aleppo and Damascus airports for the nth time. I don't know how many times they've done it. And I think that was a warning to the government of President Assad not to get involved. And also the U.S., I think, has upped the ante considerably by launching airstrikes in Iraq against popular mobilization groups, which they claim had launched attacks on U.S. bases in Iraq. So these are moves, I think, to deter Iran and Syria from getting involved in the conflict on the side of the people of Gaza and of Palestine in general. But they are escalations, and they do threaten the peace. They're completely illegal. The U.S. has no business whatsoever in Syria. It has an occupation there of the third of the country that has all the oil and the wheat resources. It should get out of there right now. And in Iraq, it should be pointed out that at the time of the assassination, the blatant assassination by President Trump of General Soleimani, the Iraqi parliament unanimously passed a resolution that the U.S. should get out of there, too. But these latest actions by Israel and the U.S. are escalations, which I think are intended to deter neighboring Arab countries from getting involved on the side of Palestine.
Ray McGovern, let's talk about the issue of accountability. There has to be consequences for the crimes that the Israelis are committing. The murdering of children, innocent women, targeting schools, targeting medical facilities, choking off an entire population from the rest of the world. Where does and how does accountability start?
Let me just comment first on the last speaker's just words here. It could be that the U.S. bombings in Iraq now and Syria are meant to deter neighboring countries from playing a major role. It could equally well be that they're to provoke them, okay? Provoke them. Everything is said about these Iran-supported terrorists, Iran is supporting these terrorists. So it is my view that it's more likely to provoke them because people in Washington would like nothing more than that. Now, as far as genocide is concerned, I mean, it's clearly defined in international law. Countries have been accused and convicted of genocide, witness Yugoslavia in the late 90s. And so if the United Nations, representing the world's people, cannot summon the cumin and the courage to come out and stop this thing, even if it's just a temporary pause in the bombing, well, then they're not good for anything. I think they are good for lots of stuff, and I think the Chinese and the Russians believe so as well. I think we will see within the next week a temporary ceasefire, and I hope to God that does happen, because otherwise Israel is going to do something really stupid, in part to provoke the regional powers to react, and thus in turn provoke the U.S. to defend its, quote, ally, end quote, Israel. I put quotes around there because Israel is not an ally of the United States. Look it up in the dictionary. An ally requires a mutual defense pact, and there ain't none between Israel and the United States.
Okay, thanks a lot, gentlemen. Former CIA analyst Ray McGovern joining us from Raleigh, North Carolina, and thanks to Ken Stone from the Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War from Hamilton, Ontario, and a special thanks to you for staying with us.